Davis. Yarrow the bird.
Ave! Satana!
Hail!
Hail! Satan!
Greetings, heathens. Welcome to Hail Satan. This is the podcast exploring Satanism, culture, and life in general through the eyes of modern Satanists. My name is Joseph Rose. I am perpetually sick. That's why my voice sounds like this. I'm also a member of an amazing independent congregation called Satanic Delco. And yes, we welcome members from anywhere in the world. In fact, we have a ton of international members right now, which is pretty fun. If you want to learn a little more about that, you can visit satanicdelco.com. Today on the show, I'm going to speak with Kate. She is an OG member of Satanic Delco and one of the most generally active people I know. First things first, I'm going to acknowledge a bunch of lovely people who have recently joined us on Patreon. We have Robert, Summer B, Elaine, The Blessed Brick, Alex, Another Summer, Christopher, Dakota, Jay, Aaron, Rebecca, Brianna, Jax, William, Ava, Joba Fett, Ellen, Richard, Nick, Hayden, Michael, Noir, Guillermo, Emilia, Micah. Thank you guys. I appreciate your participation, of course, and I will get to a bunch more of you later in the episode, if that's cool. If you have a moment, please visit our website at HailSatanPodcast.com. You'll find links to join me on social media, a forum to send me an email, and a link to join up with the whole gang on Patreon. We have a few different tiers to choose from with various benefits, including the Greetings from Hell Satanic Postcard of the Month Club that everyone seems to love. That is the most direct way you can support me and this show if you'd like to do that. Visit HailSatanPodcast.com. Okay, guys, we are now joined by Kate. She is a longtime member of Satanic Delco and a very active woman generally. We're going to get into all of that. Hello, Kate.
Hi, Joseph.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've had a list of episode ideas for the podcast that I just keep in my little Evernote program for the whole time that I've been doing the podcast, and your name has been on it for pretty much the whole time. Satanic Delco was already a thing before the podcast started, and you were already a member because you were a member from...
I'm OG.
Yeah, you are officially OG Satanic Delco member.
For sure.
I don't have the list in front of me, but you are one of...
Top 10.
A handful of the earliest members of the group. And I guess we'll get around to Satanic Delco, but we usually start at the beginning, and we're here to just get your story out. And I feel like you've got one.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know all of the details, but I'm eager to find out some of them today. What is your religious history? Because I feel like you've had one of those for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
So growing up Catholic, went to church every Sunday, went to Catholic school. I can very vividly remember learning the Our Father and what is a sin and all those things. Within time, Catholic school no longer fit me because later would be diagnosed with ADHD. And that's just not a place for anyone that's outside of a normal spectrum.
So your family, your parents at least were... Would you say like religion was a significant part of their life?
No, not really. No. It was just something we did on Sunday. I think it's just more of a tradition.
Okay.
That you just did it. And I think to this day, I could say all the words of the Mass.
Mm.
It's somewhere tucked away.
And going to church and stuff became a thing like very early.
Very early.
Yeah.
And then after I was taken out of Catholic school, we still went every Sunday. I went to CCD, which is basically Bible study, learn how to be a good Catholic every Sunday. You go through communion and all those things. Pretty typical, especially for this area.
When did you exit Catholic school?
Early in elementary school.
Oh, okay. It didn't last very long.
It didn't last, no.
Any particular reason for it?
Just because of my ADHD. I was not doing well at all.
Okay. And through your childhood years up into adolescence, were you a believer?
No, I mean, I was as a kid. I very much remember being like on my knees outside of my bed praying the Our Father and the Hail Mary and all those things. As I got older, that very much fell away until around high school. I can really remember I had some friends that were who were Christians, evangelicals, and they were involved in certain groups, and they always invited me to come along. And I've kind of been the kind of person, I've always felt like an outsider, and these people were inviting me in. I was like, okay, I'll come to this thing, whatever. It's a Bible study. Yeah, let's talk about it. Like, I liked asking questions. I was very enthusiastic and happy to be included in something. And I went for, I mean, years to these Bible studies. And it's actually a national, maybe even international, but nationally in the United States, it's called Young Life. And they purposely do outreach to teenagers to convert teenagers.
Yeah.
And they have camps, summer camp, fall camp, and they have all kinds of activities to really pull kids in. And that's how I eventually became a Christian, an evangelical Christian.
Okay. And this was high school.
Yes.
And so how did that go? What did that look like? You get the beginning starts casually with these groups maybe or your friends.
Right.
And then you're in somehow.
Yeah. I've come to see it as Christianity is the largest, oldest, most popular MLM.
Yeah.
Pyramid scheme. I figured that out because eventually, you know, as a mom, I get DMs from boss babes. And I'm like, why am I so triggered by this? Why is this bringing up some stuff for me? And I couldn't figure it out. And I'm like, it's my church trauma.
Yeah.
It's because it's so disingenuous. It's just so disingenuous. It's just so fake. It's, hey, girl, hey. You know, it's the same, like, trying to get you to rope you in. Only they don't get paid. They just get Jesus merit badges. And then you give 10% of your income to the church.
Yeah, that is a factor, I guess. Man. There's so much there. I can't allow myself to open that can of worms. So you get in there and at this point, you know, just on your own, in your mind, when you lay down at night, you were a believer?
Oh yeah, very much.
You were way in.
I don't do anything halfway. And that's why it took me so long to actually become a Christian, because I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm also being with ADHD, having a lot of issue regulating emotions, anxiety, depression, even just being somebody who's always been so interested in politics and the news of the world, just there's a lot of pain in the world. And I didn't know how to regulate seeing it, dealing with it, and what to do with that. And having something to say, like, I can just hand it over to this being, to God, to Jesus. And I didn't have to hold on to it anymore.
Yeah. It was a useful tool.
Absolutely.
I guess with a negative slant, we could call it a crutch. I've heard people refer to it that way. You use it as a crutch to fill a hole in your life. You know, we talk about that sometimes.
Nobody comes to Christ when they're doing so well.
Right.
They purposely prey on people who are vulnerable.
So you got really cooking. That was also still in your high school years when that became a thing?
Oh, yeah.
And that carried on until at some point along the line, a chink in the armor appears. Something starts to make you question some things.
Yeah, probably over a decade. It was maybe 13 years. I was real in. So graduated high school. I actually started to begin training to become a leader for the same group that I like graduated out of.
In that youth group.
Yes. Yeah. And they had leader camps and Bible studies, and they teach you how to convert children.
Really?
Yes. And they will straight out tell you, don't go for the popular kids.
Oh, wow.
They will straight out tell you, go for the kids that are loners, that are vulnerable, that don't have anybody. And all of a sudden I was like, hey, hold on.
Yeah. So what was the thing, or, you know, what was going on when you started to have second thoughts or see some issues?
At this point, I've married into an extremely religious evangelical family. My husband was raised Christian. I started going to the church his family went to. I had a baby. You know, I got married extremely young. I got married when I was 20.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yikes, Kate.
That's very, yeah. We dated for a year, we were engaged for a year, we got married.
Wow. Okay.
And then I think it was just so much of it, you start to have to just say, you know what, I can't think about this. So much I had to tell myself, I can't think about it. And I just have to turn it off and I just have to believe or I just have to pray and maybe it'll go away. Mm. And it just wasn't. And nothing, the culture was so toxic and so much of it was predatory. And I just knew in time, it just wasn't for me anymore. Also, my husband's family was extremely abusive towards both of us. Mm. And it was just wearing me down. And I tried talking to so many people at the church, like, I need help. You were only ever really going to get from somebody thoughts and prayers.
Right.
So much of the church also takes away your power and takes away any tool that you can have to help you in your own life. You just need to pray about it. Whatever the problem is, you need to pray about it first. So you're not taught problem solving. You're not taught critical thinking. Basically, you have to shut down critical thinking in order to continue there. And it's like wearing a suit that was just way too tight.
Yeah.
And okay, I can, if I just remove these parts of myself, if I just repress myself further, if I just squeeze myself into the shape that is, contort myself into an unnatural shape, people will like me, people will accept me, people will be nice to me. That was not the case. People were terrible to me, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And that was just the culture. And I was like, I just can't do this anymore. At the same time, my dad was dying of cancer. That was really hard. My son, he was a toddler. I just started to realize something was going on with him. I didn't have the words for it. He would later be diagnosed autistic. So I was also had really terrible postpartum depression. There was a lot going on all at the same time. And all these things are, compounding.
And when you had your child, you're how old there?
I just turned 23.
23. Yeah, that's a lot.
So I was really young.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, God's going to just swoop in and take care of all of this, you know. Again, just don't think about it. Just pray. And after my dad died, like, I fully believed, like, God was just going to swoop in and make me okay. He was going to, you know, comfort me. What do you always read? The footprints in the sand. He was going to carry you. And I was just waiting for God. And he never showed up.
Yeah. I can just only imagine what it is to be so invested in that and gradually over time feel that, I don't know, disappointment or just...
It's crushing.
Yeah, the reality that comes along and how do you deal with a thing that is so fundamental to what your life has been sort of propped up on.
Built completely on it.
Yeah.
And every decision that you've made, every good thing that's happened was because of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, any bad thing is like, well, you were bad. So you were being punished.
Yeah.
But any good thing was from God. That was another thing about being in the church was you were never allowed to take credit for anything that you did. It was all glory goes to God. But anything bad that happened to you,
your fault.
That's all you.
So there wasn't necessarily a moment or event that came along that took away your faith. It was rather you just keep seeing.
Just got chipped away.
Yeah. It's just, where is God? He's not helping. This is not working.
I end up leaving that church because honestly how terrible I was treated. And to get away from my husband's family because I just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, and nobody was willing to do anything about it because everybody knew in the church who they were. They've been there for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And they're like, but they're so nice. I'm like, right. Get behind a closed door.
So you think.
Yes.
Did that cause any tension or difficulties with your husband? I mean, this was primarily his family that was at the root of this?
I mean, at the end of the day, I was always like, this is your family. I cannot tell you what to do. But I could see at that time how badly it was affecting him. And he had to come in to realize everything that happened with him was affecting him greatly. Especially after our son was born. I think when you grow up with a lot of trauma, sometimes you don't realize how bad it is until you have a kid.
Mm.
And all of the pressure on him at that time as well. And I was like, I think you have PTSD. Like, I'm seeing all these things happen to him. And he started going to therapy. and realizing, yeah, I do. And the family would always come in and re-trigger, and it was just the cycle of abuse would go around and around and around. There was no winning with these people. There was, and not even win. There just weren't reasonable people.
Yeah.
They just had abuse wired into their system. And so over time I was like, listen, I can't do this anymore. Like, this isn't working. And I can't tell you to cut off your family, but it's for your own sake. I think you need to be putting up boundaries with them. And eventually I went away on a trip, actually to scatter my dad's ashes. Mm. And when I got back, he's like, I'm not talking to my family anymore. Mm. It's like, oh wow. Some shit went down while I was gone. Yeah. They got into a huge fight because also his faith was crumbling at the same time.
Sure.
And we were all going through this stuff together. And I mean, it sounds weird, but like, I'm very grateful that we're on the same path.
It's unfortunate that you guys would have to have it go that way, but maybe fortunate that you at least were going through it together.
Yeah. We're the kind of people, I think we've always been our backs together against the world. And yeah. I think like a lot of couples, we've been together for 19 years at this point. You can either grow together or you can grow apart.
Yeah.
And we've always chosen, even during really bad times, we're going to grow together.
Well, at that point, he lets you know he's setting up these boundaries with his family. And, mm-hmm. you know, both of your faith is waning or waned at that point. Do you have conversations between the two of you that are acknowledging that stuff? Like, oh, yeah. I don't believe this anymore, or?
Yeah, I think for a long time it was, I'm struggling with my faith. And eventually it was just, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah. Was there eventually a day where you guys came to the conclusion or decision, as it were, like, we're out of this. Like, we don't, this isn't our thing.
There was a point where I did try to go to a different church, a couple different local churches, just to see, maybe it was just that one church.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, it was pretty, it's a pretty systematic problem.
Yeah.
Throughout church, evangelical churches.
And before even speaking it out loud, even to yourself, did you settle in then to atheism, or where did you land after that?
Yeah, pretty much. Just either balancing between agnostic or atheism.
Sure.
I think it just landed on atheism eventually.
Yeah. And how or when does the idea of Satanism pop up onto your radar?
So eventually, because I have so much, I had so much to get through and heal after leaving the church and realizing how much baggage and trauma was there.
Yeah.
And having spent so much time with these people and getting to know them, good, bad, and ugly, so well, and just seeing how much that creeps into our culture, and especially politically, they are extremely politically motivated. And to see pop up on the news that the only people willing to take them on is this group called the Satanic Temple. Because for me, I feel like I've been seeing for so long and screaming into a void for so long. I'm like, these people want to destroy the wall between separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And nobody really cared. Like, everyone's like, yeah, no, like, I don't think so. I'm like, I'm telling you, these people are gunning for it, and they're going to chip away at it for as long as it takes. They're extremely motivated, because to them, it's never going to be the true Christian nation until we have, you know, prayer in school.
Let it make it be 100%.
Yes. That's the only way it could ever be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So knowing all this about them, and I was like being worried about it and not seeing anyone really care or do anything about it, seeing somebody actually take them on and kind of use their own medicine, like,
yeah,
against them.
Did you see like some of the early stuff with the Ten Commandments statue?
Yes.
And Baphomet? That was the
that
stuff.
That kind of stuff.
That,
yeah.
Too.
I was like, oh yes, I don't know who these people are, but I'm with them.
Yeah.
And that's when I eventually started looking into it, and eventually the Hail Satan documentary, I was all about it. I'm all for that kind of like good trouble.
Yes.
Kind of stuff. I'm just,
yeah, same.
I'm there for it.
And so once you watch the documentary, you feel aligned, and then you follow up with them. Do you go look up the Satanic Temple and join up and the whole thing?
Started reading more about it. And eventually I saw your post and about creating a group locally. And I was like, fuck yes.
Right on. Yeah, that was just, you just sort of saw it randomly somewhere, right?
I was hoping that there was a group close to me. I'm like, oh, I really wish I could be a part of this, but there's never going to be a group close to me. Like, right. I really didn't believe this was ever going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Sorry to say that.
Neither did I. Who knew? Who knew it was a shot in the dark, really? So, okay, at that point, you're pretty much, you're on the dark side
from
that moment on.
Oh, yeah.
And how long ago was that?
Oh, gosh.
When you found TST?
Just probably a little bit before...
Before Delco.
Maybe within the year
of that. Yeah, so maybe 3 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you found Satanic Delco, and we start to do our stuff. Yes. You know, pretty early on in the group, we got our earliest, like, charitable endeavors and all of that stuff and local stuff. And and so in that time, you mentioned even earlier on, you were maybe 23 when you had your first child?
Yes.
And they were diagnosed with autism.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
Then I had another child, and they're autistic as well.
Those are all your kids?
Just two.
Just the two.
No more.
Two boys.
Yeah.
Both with autism.
Yes.
Had you ever had much experience with children before your own?
No. I was a baby of the family. I was not a person, I didn't even want to hold. Someone's like, hold my baby. I'm like,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nah. When that opportunity was ever presented to me before having a kid, I had no idea what to do. And it felt really weird and awkward and dangerous. And like, I don't think so. Like, I don't even think I'm qualified for this.
Right.
But yeah, so I think of you often in this context of, you know, just like the special needs or autism parent, because I've got the one.
Mm-hmm.
I only have the one child. He has autism, and there are times, particularly when he was even younger, but definitely now, it's always different, it's always changing, but I get the distinct impression that I have no idea what I'm doing, or even if there is a good or right way to do any of it. And then when I think of the possibility of having two, just even two children, let alone two children with special or unique needs, I can hardly fathom what is going on over there in your house.
You know, I'm really thankful for all of the help that we had over the years, having, you know, wraparound services that are provided through the state, and they have therapists come right to your house.
Yeah.
And you can just say, help. I don't know what to do.
Have you had good experiences with all of that stuff?
So much.
Really?
So many good experiences.
At least for me, the experience of being a parent generally, but specifically parenting a child with special needs, in our case, autism, it can be a very consuming part of your experience.
Raising any child that is fundamentally different than you.
Yeah.
All the expectations that you had, they're gone.
If I had to pinpoint one specific topic or like lesson learned or anything through my experience, it has been expectations. It's the biggest one, and it's become probably because of my child. It's become like a real central focus of the way I sort of think about approaching life and just all the time. And I feel like expectations can be maybe the most dominant factor of approaching whatever, a phase of life, a project, just anything, your relationships, you know? And so there's all of these expectations that people can form when you're going to have a child,
sure, of course. Right?
My kid's going to play football. My kid's going to play in a band. My kid's going to be this kind of kid.
Especially, you know, for me, I was a lifelong athlete. I'm like, well, obviously that's what they're going to be doing, and I'm going to be coaching all the sports.
Yeah, and I've been way into music and a musician and all that stuff. My kid's going to, you know, I'm going to get him into rock and roll and let's go. So there's all of those. And I was conscious of that. And I, you know, as I was preparing to be a father, before I even had the kid in real life, I was conscious of those ideas. And I thought, I don't want to put too many expectations on my child. I don't want to, you know, set him up to be a thing that maybe he doesn't fucking want to be, you know? But then I learned, once Darwin came around, my son, it was pretty early on where I noticed differences.
How old was he diagnosed?
Well, he was diagnosed right as he was turning three, but I knew way before he was three. I won't even, you know, derail us with my experiences, mm-hmm. but I knew way earlier and I was damn near begging doctors.
Right.
Like, I'm like, doc, I'm seeing X, Y, Z. Yep. Should I be concerned? Do I have any reason to be concerned? And just one after the other, no, don't worry. You're just, you know, you're a new parent. You're being a little, I'm like, okay,
same thing.
Okay. I'm trying to shut my brain up mm-hmm. thinking, why am I looking for problems when my kid's fine?
Right.
But I just knew.
Yeah.
And so then once you realize something's a little different, there's this whole other layer of expectations that I didn't even know that I was falling into. Mm-hmm. You have expectations that you're not even aware of. Things like, my kid's going to be born with two eyes. Mm-hmm. My kid's body is going to work fine. My kid's going to read. My kid's going to talk to me. My kid's going to do basic shit. He's going to walk, mm-hmm. you know? And these things are not guarantees. No. And you kind of, you know, a little part of you just assumes that they are mm-hmm. Before that kid appears in the real world.
Yep.
And so then things are different. And so I'm really interested in hearing about just some of your feelings when these differences started to appear, how that showed itself to you and how mm-hmm. did you and your husband react and some of what that looked like for you, because I don't have a lot of people that yeah. I've really talked about those experiences with.
I think initially, I mean, again, I had really bad postpartum depression, so I was like out of it for quite a while. And it feels like a blur, honestly. I don't remember a lot of it. And I feel like when I finally, if you want to say came to, my son's a toddler almost, you know, sitting up finally, and he doesn't want anything to do with me at all. Like, he would turn his back to me to sit and play. Even as a baby, I never had a baby before. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I think my son has sensory issues with eating. He does not feel full. So I would nurse him until he threw up because he couldn't stop himself. So I smelled like old milk for about a year. he threw up after every time I fed him. Wow. And then I had to start the whole process over again. Yeah. So it was a whole lot. And, you know, he wasn't looking at me. Even like I took sign language in college, so I very much wanted to teach him sign language. Well, he wouldn't even look at my hands when I did the sign to learn the sign. I'm like, okay, so
Did you ever feel like there were issues with his hearing or speech specifically?
Well, I'm like, I'd call his name, he wouldn't answer, but if I went to the fridge and opened a cheese wrapper, he'd come running like a Labrador.
Right.
I'm like, okay, he can hear.
Yeah.
He can hear. But I'd call his name all the time, he wouldn't answer. He wouldn't turn around.
Right.
So I would go to the pediatrician and they're like, does he eat well? I'm like, yeah. Does he sleep well? Yeah. Does he spin? No. Does he flap his hands? No. Well, you know, give him some time. He also wasn't talking. Well, he would point in a book and he stopped doing that. Mm. And then he started pointing just with his middle finger, which apparently is a sign.
Perfect.
That he wouldn't use his index finger.
Yeah.
He just used his middle finger to point out everything for a while. But just little things he had started to do, he stopped doing. And he wouldn't attempt words. He was also having a lot of sensory issues, emotional. He couldn't regulate his emotions. I can specifically remember, we had a ceramic tile floor, and he would get down on all fours and slam his head into the floor. And you'd have to run over and scoop him up. And I don't know if he was just having headaches or sensory issues that he could not regulate. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to knock himself out.
And he's two, three years old. Yeah.
And also, you know, I'm seeing the other moms around me. I'm reading these parenting books and realizing none of these are fitting. I got rid of my subscription to Parents Magazine. I threw out these books. They're
useless.
They are useless to me now.
Yeah.
Other kids, am I seeing them doing more? Like, oh, well, girls talk early. Or, you know, my brother didn't talk till he was five and he's fine. I'm like, is he?
Right.
You know, you hear all these things. People just, oh, no, you know, he's just because he's a boy, he's going to talk late or whatever it is. But eventually it just kept progressing. And especially him not being able to regulate himself, he would throw himself into me and then he'd throw himself away. Like, the way I know a lot of parents, especially moms, you get that touch, like you're oversensitive to touch because someone's touching you all the time. Like he was, how he didn't knock me out sometimes, I don't know. He was all over the place. And I just was so desperate to figure out what can I do for my child and what's going on with him. And then my other son, when he was born, totally different.
How far between them?
About 3 years.
Okay.
And this, I'm like, he ate, you know, he nursed immediately. He didn't have any problems nursing. He slept through the night, you know, he looked at me. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe he's not. And then as time went on, he was having sensory issues again and not talking, and he wouldn't even attempt speech. Mm. And so we had to start the process all over again, getting, you know, getting him services and everything.
Yeah.
But they're totally different. Like, people assume that they'd be a lot alike. They're not. They have two totally different personalities.
Yeah.
Wow. And different behaviors.
That is even, gosh, I mean, that's more complicated.
Right, because we have one kid finally figured out.
Yeah. Well, like, this is how an autistic kid works. Well,
right, because nope. My first son was very motivated for some things, for certain toys. He was very motivated for food. And I was like, okay, I can use this. Okay, if you do this, you go to the grocery store, we're going to go to the store, and when we're done, I'll get you something, you know, whatever. My other son, he could give a fuck. He's like, I will watch this world burn. Like, yeah. He's that kind of, I'm like, oh my God.
Wow. And I mean, that must just be, I mean, I know from some experience with just one, that it can be incredibly frustrating, incredibly sad and difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's very alienating.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And also, I was very fortunate that I had a partner that was by my side the whole time, because so many women, majority wise, sometimes it can be the reverse, but majority wise, the husbands cannot accept it. And they will actively fight against their child getting services because they refuse to believe, not my boy, not my son.
Right.
So I was very fortunate that my husband, like, he would go to IEP meetings and the teachers are like, I think their jaws are hanging open because I can't believe the husband is there and to fight them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I've heard stories like that, and we've all heard a million stories of the classic deadbeat dad scenario, especially with couples where the parents are separated. You know, the dad is not always present. Everybody's situation is unique, and I don't know why that is so present. But in my case, I don't know. It never occurred to me as an option, you know, like, and I'm sure part of it is because I didn't have a dad. And so I was going to be super dad. You know, I made it. My decision was like, I'm going to be all up in this kid's business. You know, I'm going to be the opposite of my dad. And then I did find myself in a relationship where we were going to be separate and raising a kid. But it was never really a discussion. There was never a discussion of like, all right, well, I'm not going to be at this meeting. Like, I was going to be at every motherfucking meeting, or that meeting can't happen. You know?
As soon as I meet somebody that also has autistic children, there's just, I feel like there's something between you and that person. Like, you just, you know.
Yeah.
And I have friends, our sons, they're majority of my sons. Not, some of them have daughters, but generally they all have sons. And
Way more boys.
We all understand each other better than anyone possibly could. Even though our kids are all different, on different levels and having different behaviors, nobody else can understand our life.
Yeah. And I guess, I don't know if this is weird, but to make a religious connection, I could believe that in the throes of special needs parenting, desperation, and, you know, upset and all of that, was there ever a moment where you had to question or wanted to question religion again? Like, why is this happening to me? Or can some force out there help us or anything?
I mean, at that point, it was pretty much already broken for me. But, you know, in the very beginning, it was just like, I just wanted to figure out what was going on and why. And when you told people, you went to people who were friends or your family that were religious, and some of the things that they said pushed me away even harder, because we were told that the reason my son is autistic is because of the sin in our life. Anything that, quote unquote, bad, I don't really see it as something that's bad. It's just that he's different. And anything like any kind of problem, quote unquote, is a direct result of the sin in your life.
Yeah.
So that was a big, I was just like, well, fuck you too.
You've been bad. And therefore God has cursed you with sons with autism.
I was like, is that, and that was from my husband's family. I was like, that's how you see your grandchild
as
cursed? Get the fuck away from me. Yeah. I was just like, no.
So how long have you been a parent now?
Oh boy. My son is 14 and a half, will be 15, and he is bigger than me. He wears a size men's extra large.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
And my other son is 11 and a half, and he's a peanut.
How are these guys doing currently?
They're generally doing really speaking. Well. I mean, honestly, quarantine doesn't really affect them very much because, I mean, we rarely went places and did things and were inside all the time. My younger son is very sensitive to weather. He's terrified of rain. Mm. So if it gets cloudy, he would run around and close every window.
Everything.
I'm like, it's beautiful outside. Please open the windows. It's just one cloud. Like, if there was one cloud, we couldn't go somewhere.
Right.
Because he'd have a meltdown
about it.
And, you know, you just do what you can do. Sometimes you're like, you know, you need to build a little tolerance to this. Other days I'm like, I can't torture this kid.
Yeah.
So we were already pretty locked down. Like, kids aren't doing sports. They don't have friends. I'm like, so to see all these other parents be like, we have to be inside. My kids, you know, they don't get to see their friends. I'm like, yeah, what's that like? I mean, it's you're living.
Your kids have friends?
I'm like, you're like, oh no, they can't do the. I'm sorry. I'm not happy that their kids aren't getting to do the things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I've been telling you, I've been living this life for 10 years. You never gave a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. You just mentioned sort of finding the balance between going along with or tolerating your son's behaviors or sensitivities mm-hmm. versus trying to like force them a little bit to gain a tolerance of like, well, look, you should go outside. It's raining, or you should try this thing. And that is a thing that I struggled with so many times about so many things.
You can't fight every battle.
Yeah. Some of it is like, he didn't want to go in the ball pit. At the kid place. You take your kid to a fun place to play and he's terrified of the ball pit.
Aww.
He doesn't want to go in it. He's scared of it or doesn't want to touch it and he's freaked out by it. And in my mind, I'm like, I know if this kid goes in the ball pit,
he's going to love it.
A, he's definitely not going to die. It's just the ball pit. It's not actually going to hurt him. And, you know, beyond that, he probably might have a good time. He might like it.
It's really hard finding that line. There are times I'm just like, even when they were younger, some of their therapists would be like, okay, we're going to have a planned disappointment. And we're going to say, we're going to go to the movies and we're going to go there and the movie's going to be sold out or whatever it is. And we're going to plan for this. And how are we going to deal with it in the moment? And I'm like, listen, bitch, I'm tired. I can't do this right now.
Yeah.
I'm not putting my kid through that right now.
Do you still find yourself having to walk that line or make that
every
decision?
Day. That's my whole life.
Yeah.
There are definitely times like we'll even go to the pool in the summer and a cloud will come across the sky. My son will be like, we need to go home right now. And I'm like, listen, you know, I kind of just gauge the situation because you know what? I have issues too. I have anxiety. I have depression. There
are
times I don't want to leave the fucking house. I don't want to deal with people. There are things. So I'm like, I understand how exhausting it can be to them, but at the same time, you still have to live your life. And my younger son, he would not do anything that was not a preferred activity if you did not cattle prod him.
Right.
So like, he's kind of kid, like even his teacher's calling me and she's like, I'm going to have to like kind of push him. I'm like, push him. Or he's not going to ever be an independent person.
Yeah, it's such a hard.
It's so hard.
It's such a balance. Like in that specific example that I used of the ball pit, eventually I just pushed the kid into the ball pit. I made the decision. I'm like, look, it's not like he's throwing a fit. He's not having a,
right.
You know, he's not having a harmful like meltdown.
And did he like it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fine. He played in the ball pit. He ended up being fine. He would then run and jump into the ball pit. But it really. And it all didn't happen in one day. Like, I didn't make that decision the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we went back to that place several times.
Oh, yes. I mean, we used to build, and like, do you ever make social stories?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, here's the ball pit. We're going to try it today, right, man? We're going to do it today.
We did a whole thing.
We didn't do it.
We used to, because when we first started taking our kids to see, like, behavior therapists and everything, they'd be like, you leave the house? Because none of our other clients go anywhere. They're all shut down. Because not only taking the kid is difficult, the way other people in public treat you is abhorrent. If you see a child in public melting down, mind your fucking business.
Yeah. I remember maybe a specific day. I'm just having flashbacks now having this conversation with you. I never would have thought of these memories again without this conversation.
We burned them all out.
I'd buried them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember specific examples where, you know, what was happening is irrelevant. You know, we're just doing a basic thing at a basic place out in public. And I remember thinking, oh, I used to see kids like whiling out in a restaurant or a whatever, having a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And thinking, you know, this fucking parent – What's wrong with, how dare they bring this kid out here? You know, people are trying to live a life and this kid can't keep it together. What's the matter with this parent?
We used to go to the Please Touch Museum in Philly all the time. We used to go to the zoo all the time.
Same.
And to the point, but like leaving was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So we actually made a social story where you take pictures. Okay, Brad, you know, my son's name's Brad. Brad's going to get in the car. We're going to drive and pictures each page. We're going to go to the Police Museum. We're going to play with the trucks. We're going to play with this. And then we're going to have lunch. And then we're going to leave. We're going to, you know.
And it's going to be great.
And it's going to be great. Like just honestly giving them that expectation. This is what the day is going to be.
Yeah.
That saved us so much.
You found it very helpful.
And it helped him so much just get through things. Even if he went to a new school, we would go take him ahead of time. This is your new school. It's the door, the building with the red door. This is your teacher, Miss So-and-so. And this is where you're going to put your coat. And then we would build a whole social story book for him with pictures and him in it. And then the first day of school, the teachers are like, wow. Especially considering my husband was involved. They were like, wow, husband's helping. Like,
impossible.
Like, like, this is newsworthy.
Yeah. A half-decent man interacting with a child.
Yeah, a disabled child at that. Yeah. A child with a disability. I mean, they just didn't see it very often.
Yeah.
It was just a very sad fact.
It is.
And that's why I give you all the credit in the world, because I see so many of these people just say, either they're the parent that I'm not doing any of it, or they're just going to say, they're not even going to try.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, there's those, I can only imagine you've had moments where you're at the end of your rope.
Oh yeah.
And you're fucking, you can barely see through the tears and you just don't know what to do anymore. I've had those moments. I'm certain you've had them.
Especially with no family help, like not having that support. People that have like a nice supportive family. Can you please adopt me?
True. I mean, I never had that. Mine was different than yours. I just didn't have one. Like my family's all dead. I didn't, you know, my last family member passed away when my son was like 3. Mm. So that was it. That was the end of that.
Yeah. People that have those large structures to kind of help, like, oh, my mom's going to take him for a little bit or my sister's going to be, I'm like, what the fuck? Could they take my kids too? Like,
Well, that's good. The kids seem to be doing okay. You're getting along.
They're doing very well.
Yeah. It's always an adventure still.
Oh, yes.
Always an adventure.
Oh, yes.
And the other thing I definitely wanted to talk about a bit with you is, well, there's plenty to talk about, but you've always, at least from where I'm sitting, you've seemingly had a consistent devotion to social justice. For so long. There was a stretch there where it seemed like every goddamn day, Kate was out at some kind of either protest or charity function or organizing something or trying to wrangle people into that type of thing.
Always.
And so I want to learn a little bit about why that has become such a priority for you. And even if you found there to be, surely you would have noticed some sort of crossover or overlap between that type of social justice and things like the 7 tenets that we all pay so much attention to.
Yeah, I really love the tenets. When I first read them, I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely for me. But I think for me, especially in the age of social media, everybody has a fucking opinion. And congratulations for that. I have mine as well. But to me, like, if your actions don't match that, I'm not interested at all. And for so many people, you know, well, I just posted it or complained about it online. And that's enough. And I'm like, it's not. It's really not. So especially for me, and of course, for a lot of people, like after Trump was elected, it was like, there's no more like, I'm too busy to get involved. Like I have 2 autistic children. I was absolutely broke. I didn't have any support or anything like that. I'm like, I have to be active. I cannot just say what I'm about. I have to be about it. And I think a really clear memory for me was going to the first women's march in Philadelphia. And there's a sea of white ladies. And we all took the train in. And we get to the train station in Philly. And, you know, we're flooding the station. And there were unhoused people, homeless people everywhere because it's January. And, you know, they hunker down in places where it's warm. And they were all just stepping over them. Excuse me, pardon me, I have to go fight for my rights.
Right.
White lady business, excuse me. Yeah. I was just like, no, that's not sitting right with me. I don't like that. So I knew I needed to get involved. I wanted to be involved in something that was grassroots. I didn't want something that was a corporation that had some big overhead or something like that.
Sure.
And I wanted to help people directly. And I saw something pop up on Facebook, and I saw one of my friends was interested in it. And I was like, hey, are you really going to go to this thing? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, me too. So almost 5 years doing this monthly now, but it's called One Kind Act a Month. And we meet every fourth Saturday in Philadelphia on the corner of 9th and Market. And we have lunches and toiletries and any kind of donation. And we walk through the city handing out donations to unhoused people. Now, I know people are like, well, but the shelters. I'm like, some of those shelters are extremely predatory, or people have been abused in shelters. It's just not always a good place for them, honestly.
Yeah, and I've heard
even get in there.
Yeah, I've heard countless examples of a lot of those folks, for various reasons, they just don't like them or don't feel comfortable with them.
A lot of them are extremely, a lot of the shelters are very religious, and they are extremely conditional.
Yes.
And if you want to be there, like there's even like City Team in Chester. I'm sorry, I don't know if this is still the case. At least years ago when I was a Christian, it was the case. If you wanted to be living there, first of all, they only took men to live there. You had to live a Christian lifestyle.
Right.
And I was just like, what?
As defined by
someone. As defined by them.
Right.
Which, I mean, yeah. I'm not even sure, like, are you allowed to be a gay person there? I don't know. But working, doing this for so many years, like, homelessness is a word that so many people, it's like one word, but it's such a variety of people that you see.
Oh, yeah.
And getting to hear people's stories over the years, it's, especially all my passion for politics and everything, seeing how many broken systems just empty into this and why the richest country in the world has such an epidemic for this. Because it can happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. It almost happened to me. Like, we almost lost everything at one point. And I don't know how we kept a roof over our heads.
Yeah.
And to see how many people out there with medical, because medical debt bankrupt them. You know, so many veterans, so many people who are mentally ill and they have no help. People who were in prison for, you know, bullshit, nonviolent crimes, and then they have nowhere to go. We see sex workers. I see a lot of women who are running away from abusive spouses with their children. People who just, you know, they can't afford to live wherever the rent was, got kicked out. A lot of addicts. It's just, it's very,
there's it's a very unfortunate. Ways.
There's a million ways. And, you know, I started, as my son got older, I started bringing him, and he loves it. Really? He always wants to go. Even one time we were on a field trip in like historical Philadelphia. This is before COVID. And he'd gone with me a couple times, and there's a huge crowd like on a corner waiting to cross, and sitting on the stoop is this homeless person with a sign, you know, please help. Any little bit helps. And that's why I don't like to say autism is something bad. My son is different. Both of my sons are different, and they have a different way of seeing the world.
For sure.
And in many ways, it's an absolute blessing. And I think we could all learn to be like them.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, why do all these people have their back turned? This other human being sitting here saying, I need help. He's like, Mom, he's like, why aren't they helping them? I'm like, I know. And so I'm like, okay, here's a couple dollars for this guy. And then the next box, and I'm like, listen, I only have so many dollars. I can't give money to every person out here. But he's just like, well, can't we just help them? Like, can't we? So the fact that, you know, my 14-year-old son wants to go out and help people.
There's something in that, like, that unfiltered honesty, yes, and like curiosity that really cracks it wide open.
Because we are so conditioned to not look at them.
We're desensitized to so many things.
Yes. And especially I have some friends, they've wanted to come out to the event, and they're like, hey, I really want to come, but I don't have any extra money. I can't donate anything. Can I still come? I'm like, first of all, yes, because you can help me carry stuff.
Yeah.
But second of all, if you can just look somebody in the eye, pre-COVID, I'd say shake their hand.
Sure.
But look them and say, hi, how, like, what's your name? You know, you're from Philly originally? Like, that means so much that you give just human-to-human contact. And just, it to me, it's priceless. And honestly, they'd probably take that over your donations.
Yeah.
Because imagine sitting there all day, every day, and people act like you don't exist. Yeah. When you're suffering the most.
Yeah, that is compounding on the initial, whatever the problem was. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're already struggling. You've got like now physical obstacles to overcome, obviously, especially in a place on the East Coast where weather is every different extreme throughout the year.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have countless, maybe hundreds of people a day at least, avoiding you.
And even some people that do talk to you, but only to talk really shitty to you and talk down to you.
Yeah.
Like
when you need the help the most.
Yeah,
I
just
guess.
Get a job or whatever, you know.
Right. And this is still a thing that you participate in?
Yeah. So again, it's every fourth Saturday, and it's on 9th and Market is where we meet. And we walk to Love Park.
What is the name of it again?
It's called One Kind Act a Month. Okay. And it's actually founded by a local man. He's a father, and he started doing it just with his son, and he posted it online, and it kind of went viral. So it is truly grassroots. He actually is a Christian. He does it with his whole family. So his dad's actually a pastor who's involved. Hmm. And at the very end, they kind of set up seating at Love Park, and it's optional if you would like to sit there and listen to the dad. It gives it's called 15 Minute Church. They have a really quick sermon. And it's totally optional because a lot of these people do want to go to church and they get kicked out. Mm. So like the fact that.
Imagine that.
Right?
God damn.
So here
kicked
I am a
out
Satanist.
Of church for being what? Like not dressed properly or looking a little fucked up?
Yeah. Well, they're probably afraid like you're going to bother people or, you know, be asking for money or.
Shocking.
Yeah. So these people actually want to participate in a religion and they are shunned for what they look like. And I'm like, didn't Jesus wasn't he homeless? Right. Wasn't he wandering around a bunch of dudes, transient people?
Yeah.
But yeah, so the fact, so I'm actually, you know, I'm really happy to be working with them. They're really wonderful people. They're not predatory. They're not manipulative. They give a really lovely sermon at the end. Jesus loves you, that kind of stuff. And
so for anybody, you know, this is a regional
yes, this is just in
thing,
Philadelphia.
Yeah. So if you live in or near Philadelphia or Delaware County, this is an option if you did want to participate.
They have different weekends. Like they'd have one in Camden. They have one in Atlantic City on different weekends. And then every fourth Saturday is the one in Philly. And I've been doing that for 5 years now.
5 years, still going. Very cool. And yeah, even beyond that, I know you've, you know, I've seen you doing this, you know, consistently, but there's always been a million other things.
There's always a million other things.
Whenever there's something going on, Kate's going to be somewhere with a sign or something.
Really involved with Black Lives Matter locally
and
some racial equality groups locally. I mean,
was the Trump presidency a catalyst for more of that stuff, at least for you? Did that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it just kind of, it wasn't enough to just. To say, yeah, you know, I'm against this or I'm for this or whatever, but to actually say, you know what, we're actually going to do something.
Yeah.
We're going to get engaged. And, you know, as much as I know a lot of Satanists like to rip on Christians.
Sure.
And oh, they're so stupid or whatever, which I don't really get into that. I'm like, guess what? They're far more organized than you are. They're far more motivated.
Oh, yeah.
They're far more engaged.
Yeah. And it's all, look, it's all, it's people shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's people shit.
Oh, for sure.
Satanists got all the problems, you know, a lot of the hypocrisy.
It comes with every group.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who's listened to enough of this podcast has heard enough satanic hypocrisy to point out some examples. And there will be more forever because people are going to people no matter what religion or ideals they attach themselves
tribalism.
To. Yeah.
It's just the way people be people.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you do a lot of that stuff, and we could all do more. I mean, aside from maybe you actually, like that was the point. Like that was, you know, the idea. I just see you more than anyone I've ever seen is just, you seem so tied into that stuff and really putting your money where your mouth is, I guess.
Well, I mean, I went so hard in the other direction. I figure I need to like course correct and
that's
go
right.
hard in this direction.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap any of this up, Kate, should we... You want to talk about sex?
We can talk about sex.
Okay. But not really sex. You have a couple of things that I guess touch on the topic of sex.
Sure.
I've known you to be maybe a small business owner where you created certain types of crafts.
Yes.
Should we elaborate?
Yeah. Actually, I'm sad to say, I actually had to close down my shop. I had an Etsy store that was a kink/BDSM Etsy store. My husband has a wood shop. I married my own personal Ron Swanson. and the man is very good with the wood. And about, gosh, it's probably been about 3 years now. Even though I was never really into that scene before, I don't know if anyone else remembers, but something from our area went viral. And it was a house that was for sale, and its entire basement was a BDSM kink dungeon basement.
I remember.
But it was like in a mansion. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I grabbed my husband, and I was like, see this? I was like, people that are very into any kind of niche thing, really.
Yeah.
I'm like, they will spend a lot of money on it. I was like, and that stuff, I was like, you could do that if not better. So
he was already into woodworking.
Yes.
And you stumbled upon this house, for those of you who don't know, out here somewhere in our general
shelf hunt,
area, there was a house for sale, a very nice house and maybe a mansion that was, people started sharing the listing around. It went viral a little bit because in this house, they had basically a sex dungeon.
Yeah. It was in the real estate listing.
It was in the listing on the photos where you could clearly see a lot of their accessories and whatnot in this room. And so you got an idea.
Yeah. And that's how, when we started our Etsy store, it's called Slut and Stuff. And we just made BDSM paddles. And we got a little bit into making St. Andrew's crosses and stuff like that.
What is the St. Andrew's cross?
Oh, so that's like the big X. If you've ever seen it, like standing upright, and it has like chains on it. You can be chained to it, and it's to be used in like a BDSM scene. You're tied up or chained up, and a dom will work on you a little bit, spank you.
Work on you.
Yeah.
Sounds terrifying.
But like in a good, exciting way.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. I am lucky enough to have one of Kate's paddles. It's hanging on the very wall that we're sitting in right now here in the room. It is a hell of a work of art.
Yes, it is.
It is functional and beautiful. All right. So you're not doing that so much at this time.
I just don't. Unfortunately, it's a good problem. I don't have the time. My husband actually quit his full-time job to do the workshop full-time. He has a contract, and we have a lot of really big projects that I don't have time to make,
that's awesome.
make the paddles anymore. I really wish I did, but I just don't right now. Maybe in the future again. But I had to put that on pause.
Sure.
But it did get me into like the kink BDSM scene more, and that got me more into the polyamory scene as well.
Which led to?
So my husband and I were already kind of opening up our marriage a bit into the possibility of polyamory. And that's actually how we met our partners, was
through that scene.
Through that scene, because they were very involved in the kink BDSM scene, and they were both doms.
And so what is the situation now? If we can talk
about it. Yeah.
By all means, don't let me pry.
No, you're fine. Everyone wants to know.
I want
to
know what's going on over there.
People I haven't seen in 10 years are like, tell me. I'm like, okay.
What's the deal?
What's the deal? So we are a married couple dating another married couple. And my husband is, he's straight. So the two men are not seeing each other. So it's my husband has a girlfriend, and I have a boyfriend, and they are a married couple. And we've been together for over 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And so I've never known anyone directly in an arrangement like that.
Really?
Never have. Not to my knowledge anyway. I suspect it would have come up, but maybe not. But you find, like, how is it going? I guess I want to ask the most basic questions.
It's going
like,
really well.
All of the specifics or whatever are less important. I'm just fascinated by the... just the general relationship and like sort of family dynamic.
Yeah, it's definitely become a family structure. We have kids. They had a baby throughout this process. My husband first started dating his girlfriend. She's like, you know, my husband and I, we want to have a baby. Is that going to be an issue? And he was like, no, it's cool by me. So she got pregnant throughout that whole process. And they now have like a 16-month-old baby, I believe she is. Yeah. And
you guys are all sort of interacting in a way with all of this, like
people are like, kind of can't believe, they're like, my husband, they're like, so you like help take care of your girlfriend's baby? And he's like,
I mean it is very interesting. Super unique.
People are like, is it his baby? I'm like, no, he my husband got a vasectomy a very long time ago.
Okay.
It's the best thing you can ever give your partner.
a vasectomy.
Yeah. I highly recommend.
Yeah. We should probably have more vasectomies going around.
Gentlemen, do you hear that?
Hey, you know,
ball owners, you hear that?
Wow. Just in real time now, as we're having this chat.
Yeah.
What a genius idea I've just had, Kate. You've
snips
given me,
for Satan?
Maybe so. I'm thinking this is a valuable charity, maybe. This is going to be a thing, guys.
I think y'all should
do it.
I mean, the most popular time to get it done is during March Madness, apparently, because then you can sit there and watch the game. That's the most popular time. So you can sit there with, you know, a bag of peas on your nuts and watch the game. Okay. So get your appointment now.
Wow. Yeah.
Do nowadays, it for your partner.
They do these. I've looked into it myself, guys. I've not yet had a vasectomy, just so you know.
Do it.
But it's been on my mind for some time, and they have one out there now. I don't even know how they do it, mm-hmm. but I know that it is no needle, no scalpel. Really? No needle, no scalpel. How they do it, I don't know. It is satanic magic. But they do it, and there's a place, you know, here in a you know, one of our surrounding little burbs mm-hmm. that is one of the people doing that.
Get it done.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
It's a little more expensive than the traditional one, but like it's not that much.
Even the traditional one's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's really not.
Yeah.
Especially when your partner's pushing out a baby.
Yes. I mean, look, admittedly,
y'all can handle it.
Admittedly, I'm a bit of a baby about the idea. I don't mm-hmm. love the idea, but the idea of one with no
needle.
How
do you feel about
no
having
scalpel?
Another child?
No.
Would you rather get a ball snip or have another child?
I certainly am not looking for another child. I love my son.
I know for me, even after I was with a partner that had a vasectomy for 10 years plus before this happened. I was like, oh my God, I have to figure out birth control again. And I was like, oh no, like I don't do well with hormonal birth control. I go crazy. So I actually ended up getting a copper IUD.
Okay.
And I was petrified because online they were like, it's the worst pain in the world.
Oh.
It was fucking fine.
Really?
It was honestly one of the best things I ever did for myself. Now, granted, just like the vasectomy, it was a little bit painful.
Sure.
And I went home and had like a hot water bottle.
Yeah.
For a day or two, but I got over it. And you know what? It's better than pushing out a baby. So
yes,
I'll take it.
All right. You've heard it, guys. Everybody, let's go do some birth control. We've got too many goddamn people on this earth as it is.
Yes.
Well, all right, Kate, you're continuing on with your social justice. Mm-hmm. You're raising these kids. Mm-hmm. You're an active Satanist. Mm-hmm. How are things going with Satanic Delco? What has your experience in Satanic Delco been like? I should ask.
It's been, it's been
all right?
Really good. I've been happy.
All right. You like the gang?
I like everybody here. You know, as somebody that's always felt like an outsider, I never really felt like I had a place. Even like I was a jock, but like I was too much of a nerd to fit in with the other jocks, and I was too much of a jock to fit in with the nerds. And like I just never really felt like I had a place. And to be around other people here who I think are also outsiders, and I'm like,
it is our thing.
What's up, people? And like I can be me. And they can be that, like, I don't have to be that goth girl, like, and people still accept that I'm like the suburban mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, hey.
I don't know. I haven't spent much time focusing on this, but where we're sort of headquartered, where Satanic Delco was born, is in a suburb outside of the city that we're near. Mm-hmm. And I think there's maybe a little something to that, mm-hmm. Especially in the early days when the earliest personality of the group was being born and formed. There is something to being the outsiders in so many different ways.
Yeah.
I always like to say the outsiders among the outsiders. That's what we are for so many ways. Like we're not in the cool city. You know, there's a whole thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, our own, even Delco, it kind of has a reputation for,
for sure.
Certain things. You know, there's a certain attitude or vibe from where we live. You've also had an interest in local politics,
mm-hmm.
and you've made some moves in that direction recently.
Yeah.
What can we talk about?
The more involved I got in local politics, the more I realized how fucking incompetent a lot of these people are. And it just seems like a good old boys club, especially here in Delco.
For sure.
And I see some people making some moves, and I just really want to support them. I'm not the kind of person that is going to be in the forefront. I'm not going to run for council. I don't have the skin to deal with people trying to ruin my fucking life in a public scene. And they will try.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, you know what? I'm the kind of person that's behind the scenes. Like, even like they did ask me to run for the local Democratic Party. It was like, will you run for school board? And I was like, y'all don't want me. I'm like, I'm queer. I'm polyamorous. I'm a Satanist. And they're like, oh yeah. Okay. And I was like, oh, right. And then I own a kink BDSM Etsy store. They're like, oh yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. You're going to be
I was like, you're going to have to like distance yourself from me pretty soon. I was like, but I will do whatever I can for the people who are running because our school board has literal bigots on it. And people are just like, the gays are coming to get your kids. Mm. Rainbow flags are dangerous. I'm like, it's the 1950s.
Yeah.
These people really want to make America quote unquote great again. They want to go back.
Right.
And, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion were completely demonized. And I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? So I knocked on doors. That was the first time I ever canvassed, was for a school board this year in Aston. I actually got recently was awarded like one of Delco Democrats Volunteers of the Year. And people were like, oh, where were you volunteering at? I was like, oh, I was in Aston. They were like, oh, God. I was like, yeah, it was pretty rough. People just come out and start screaming at you. I was like, it's real fun.
So what is the position you've
taken? Oh, so I did, my local Democrats were like, hey, there's some couple write-in positions. You know, would you be interested? And I was like, that I will do. And it was for a minority election inspector. Which I, you know, it's not something I had to run for. I needed to just get a handful of people to write me in for. And at the end of the day, I'm not there for a party. I'm there for democracy. I'm like, let's just make sure our elections are legal and ethical and everyone, you know, everything good is happening. And so I basically just have to work on election day now at the polls.
Okay.
So, and it should be fun. You know, I have to learn a lot about it.
It's a certain kind of fun.
It's a certain kind of fun. But I really want to encourage a lot of people to get involved and run for local politics. We really, really need you to run for school board. You may think, oh, I'm not qualified. Guess what? All the bigots in your town think they're qualified and they are running. Run for your local council. I didn't have thick enough skin for it. Maybe you do.
Do you think that this is a first step in a direction?
I'm going to do this and see how it goes. Yeah. I think in time, maybe I'd like to do more, but I'd like to start here.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to be on a school board.
I, you know, Joseph, I would knock on some doors for that.
Yeah. I mean, but all of those,
you have my
all
support.
Of those things you mentioned about why it could be problematic. I mean, just imagine if I were that guy, like, I don't know.
Again, they have bigots on there and no one fucking cares.
Yeah.
So
yeah, true.
Come at me.
Maybe it's worth it. It would be hilarious. I bet
Democrats be pulling their fucking hair out. They'd be like, oh no, not this guy. Yeah. But that's the best part.
This is the guy.
You can run as an independent.
Yeah. I would have to, I think.
You would have to. Yeah.
Well, all right, Kate. First of all, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. Glad we could do this.
Yeah. I don't get to see you often enough, but hopefully we'll change that a little bit, especially when the cold weather and COVID get a little bit out of our way.
Yeah, hopefully.
Is there anything specific that you want to mention or lead the people to? Do you have a website or a thing that you want people to know about, or they should just leave you alone?
I am on the TikToks.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us about this.
You can follow me on the TikToks. My handle or username, I'm sorry, I'm very old. I don't know how these things work, is Gray, that's G-R-A-Y underscore guitar on TikTok.
And you've got a shitload of people on there.
Apparently, people want to hear me talk about my trauma for free.
It's popular.
It's very popular.
All right.
So you can check me out there. I talk about the Satanic Temple. I talk about my life as a Satanist, as a mom of autistic children, and all that kind of good stuff, polyamory.
Cool. All right. Thank you again, Kate.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Before I go, I want to acknowledge some more of the wonderful people who have joined us recently on Patreon. We have Andrian, Harley, Austin, Janice, Shannon, Joshua, MK, Jeremy, Mooney Snitch, Luella, Vala, Alexander, Ashley, Dan, James, Tagar, Timothy, Samantha, Nicole, Christian, Nero, and Holly. Thank you all very much. I never forget how lucky I am and how supportive you all are of my vision and my mission with this. You are the best. And if you have a moment, please visit the website at HailSatanPodcast.com. And stay safe out there, please. Hail Satan. Evil free is serious.